accession number 12224, reel 3.
Three. Well, I remember that from MAD, several teams of men went out to do relief work, but none of the women did. And at the time, I don't think the army would accept women relief workers. I suspect that's why we didn't go, because I know that the unit was quite keen to send us. I don't think I felt particularly frustrated. I realised that it just wasn't possible. Relief teams were sent out under the Red Cross umbrella. Whether they were prohibiting girls from going, I don't know. I think probably the unit women were amongst the first relief teams to go. We always went in mixed teams. But I spent a few months there. I can't remember now whether it was weeks or months. And I did a lot of sewing, I remember, sewing on name tapes and that sort of thing.
You worked also at the Systems Advice Bureau, did you?
Yes, I think it was after this spell that... I can't remember whether I went to the maternity hospital next or whether I went to the Citizens Advice Bureau next... But I think it was probably after this training when they had to find more occupation for the women who they couldn't send abroad. And I was sent to the Citizens Advice Bureau at Toynbee Hall. I think at that time I was living in the London hostel. It was the FAU had part of the students' hostel. I dare say the medical students were evacuated to somewhere else, and we were using that accommodation. I remember living in the London hostel because, first of all, we had to stoke the boilers, and the women did that as well as the men, and it was quite a heavy job. They were very large boilers to stoke. I've got a feeling that after a month or two of this, that the girls didn't do it anymore. But I certainly remember stoking them. We also did fire watching on the roof. And I found this quite frightening because there was no sort of fence around the edge of the roof and I wasn't very good at seeing in the dark. And there was a little sort of shelter thing on the top. And then there was the roof with every possibility of falling off it. And we were there fire watching during the raids.
Were there many at that time?
Yes, there were quite a lot. When I was in London, it was a time of V2s. I do remember being in I think it was when I was in the maternity hospital one night that one felt quite near. And I remember I was on night duty and I got up and took out my case and put it in front of the window because I thought that would stop the glass falling on me. I didn't get particularly frightened. Some of my friends said I hadn't got much imagination. But in Toynbee Hall, we had one FAU worker at a time. I think I was there for 3 months. And we were just doing a routine Citizens Advice Bureau job. Citizens Advice Bureau staff are always trained now. We were not trained, and I think I probably did the easier cases. I certainly spent a lot of time filling applications for clothing coupons and various forms. There were a very large Jewish population, and it's surprising, a lot of people used to come in because they thought they should get more clothing coupons to buy black clothes for a funeral. I don't think they did, but certainly this was a constant request. We used to fill in a lot of emergency ration cards as well for people that had lost their rations, or help them fill in the application forms. I think there were quite a lot of illiteracy, And we certainly did a lot of that sort of thing. I think the more intricate cases went to the other two workers, because they were both full-time case workers in the Toynbee Hall Citizens Advice Bureau. They were both much older than I was and quite experienced, I think. But I enjoyed working in Toynbee Hall as well. Again, it was a very interesting area to work. I'm always glad that I worked there, if it was only for a few months.
So when did you actually go abroad to do your relief work?
I think after that, I went again. They still hadn't got a place to a team to send the women, and so I think I did 6 months maternity work. I went there for 3 months, and I think I was left there. It was at St Mary's, I think it was St Mary's Hospital, the bottom of Highgate Hill. It was a very large hospital, and we were in the maternity block. That was quite an education, because I think quite a high proportion of those women were not married. I remember one from a local mental hospital who was there. And she enjoyed being in the hospital. I don't think she'd had so much care and attention for most of her life, and she was very reluctant to leave. Several of these babies were adopted afterwards, and I think the mothers had to breastfeed them to begin with, and then they had to be weaned. But I fell in love with babies in this hospital. I really do love newborn babies, and it was really a great privilege to work there.
Were there more pregnancies in the ward, you think?
I think there probably were. I imagine that the proportion of unmarried women who were there, I think, were probably all pregnancies from servicemen or more casual relationships. I think we used to test them all for VD. I think they all used to have a VD test when they came. I don't really remember that now. We used to deliver them with gloves.
Was that because of the fear of...
Well, I think it was the fear of infection, yes. I was encouraged to deliver babies, because they knew that we might have to under emergency conditions, and I did in fact deliver two babies. I've got a feeling that the first one certainly had a tear, so I don't suppose I did it very well, but I think she had had a tear on the previous one. I think we were only given allowed sort of this privilege with mothers that were having the second or third child, or perhaps even the fourth or fifth, because some of them had large families. It was a poor area of London, and on the whole, the patients were rather poor.
So all good experience for what you were going into.
It was, yes. One of the people, this was an all-women section, of course, in this maternity hospital. I think there were six of us, and I think there were three on each ward. I'm not absolutely certain about that, and the team leader was Edna Bailey. She was married to John Bailey, who was in an FAU section in the Middle East, and she hadn't seen him for a long time, and she was going out to be in a relief team in Germany. I don't think Edna did go. I think she stayed in this country. And she too has died fairly recently.
So shall we look at your relief work now, Pip, do you think? Where did you first go?
I remember having a very slow journey. I think we went from London and Tilbury. And I think it took us 36 hours on this boat to reach Germany. I suppose there was mine lane, and I think we spent a night on the boat, and I remember it was a very long time. I think that's right. We went in a convoy too. We went to Holland. I think we must have landed at. I'm not sure where we landed in Holland, but we, our team went to Utrecht. And when we were there, we were transporting workers who'd been conscripted into Germany, and forcibly very often. And they were displaced persons, and we were taking them back home. The army seemed to have a policy of returning home first the displaced persons from Allied countries. And Holland was a friendly country, and we were transporting these people home. They were sent by train to Utrecht station, and then we moved them. We just put them on our transport, and we had each relief team had two ambulances, two or three ton truck, and two 1500 weight vans, and we used these for taking people to the outlying villages. We were there a month, and during that time we had a very friendly reception. We were welcomed. I mean, it was most heartwarming. We were welcomed by everybody we met, and I've made some lifelong friends in Holland.
What was the state of the country and, you know, the people when you arrived? Because this would have been very soon, wouldn't it?
It was. I think it was the end of June. We were ready to go before the war ended. Then VE Day came, and we were still there, and we went shortly afterwards. Well, I remember that the girls... I remember some young girls, 18-year-olds, talking to us on the street in Utrecht, and both these two have been working in the underground in Holland. They'd taken great risks with their lives, and we visited their house and the house of their parents. That house was full of hidey holes. There were tiles that came out of the fireplace with radio equipment hidden in them. There was false walls in the bedrooms where they and a way up into the attic where they could run along the whole block of the buildings, and several of their men had had narrow young men had had narrow escapes being hidden throughout the war in this way. I thought there was a very good spirit in Holland. I was very impressed by the fact that when we dropped airlifted food in and dropped it in Holland, the civil authorities came and took it all and gave it out fairly. At least we think they did, although when we got there I suspect that some people made off with a little. But they'd been eating their own bulbs, and they were starving. They started getting more food, I think, shipped in by the army. I think the army started feeding them, and they fed them certainly before they fed German civilians. It was, of course, the summer, and after a bit there was some fruit available. But they were hungry, and they were so very pleased to see us. I remember that we'd been given instructions that we had to wear our skirts in Holland and in Germany. We weren't supposed to be wearing our trousers. We travelled in them all the time, but once and during the war, even in the civil service, we'd been allowed to wear slacks. But when we got into Europe, we were asked not to. We had khaki skirts. We were dressed very much as ATS, except that we had Red Cross flashes and Friends Ambulance Unit badges. I didn't drive. I don't think any of the girls in our section did. But certainly most of the men did drive. And they had been taught in the unit. I don't think they did teach any of the women. That's probably because they just didn't have enough opportunity to do it.
The people, the workers you were taking back, you know, from the station, what sort of state were they in? These would have been forced labour people.
They were forced labour. I think some of them had enlarged hearts, and I think some of them were probably ill. But they were all so delighted to be back that they were happy. They were happy to be taken home. I don't remember very clearly any sick ones. I imagine that the ill ones were taken by ambulance, and we were not involved with that. And we were not there very long either.
Were they mainly men?
Yes, they were men. I don't remember any women being brought back. There may have been some, but I don't recall them.
Was there much bitterness about the Germans?
Yes, they were very bitter about the Germans, and all their dust quarts were poured by the Quislings, the people who had cooperated with the Germans, and that the women had their hair shaved. And they were made to pull the dust carts. I suppose that the Dutch themselves had to be doing it for the Germans during the war. And they were very bitter against the Germans. There weren't any Germans in Holland. I suppose there must have been prisoners taken. I don't remember being conscious of any.
Did it alter your views of war at all, you know, to be in a country that had been under such an occupation? Could you understand, for instance, their bitterness?
Oh, yes, I could understand their bitterness. They'd had a very rough time. They'd been maltreated themselves. The people in the underground were taking great risks with their lives. The girl who I'm still now friendly... got a Jewish girl out of her garden through the house and out of the back garden and threw her over the fence and got her away, taking great risks with her own life. And she had told me that 2 days before the war ended, several of people that her friends who were in the underground had been shot by the Germans, and it was very late on, and they must have known that they needn't have done it. I think the Germans were pretty ruthless, particularly when they were losing. They'd taken down all the electric wires from the railways, and they'd broken some of the dams and flooded their good agricultural land so that it wasn't productive for several more years, because when it gets salt on it, it isn't any good for another 5 years or so. And it was sad to see all the railway lines. They'd taken all the electric wiring and everything. They took everything mobile, everything that they could, the Germans took. I think I do remember going to a friend's meeting in Amsterdam, and they were very glad to see us, and several of us went to this meeting for worship on a Sunday morning, and they had the friends in Amsterdam had made a statement about their feelings. I think I have a copy of it. I thought I did find it last night. That's all the training program at Mount Waltham, and that was given to us in Utrecht, and that's on the famine in Holland in the spring of 1945. I dare say it is quite interesting. What's this bit? That's I've already read to you. Paris meeting and the monthly meeting at Amsterdam, so they will have it.
But did they have a more tolerant attitude to the... One would expect the Queen...
They said something like they couldn't immediately forgive them, but they hoped that they would be able in time to. And it was a very remarkable statement. I'm sure we could get a copy of it. I'm sorry, I thought that's what it was, because it says on here, you know, Amsterdam Quakers, but it's this doctor who's obviously an Amsterdam Quaker. If I find it, I'll...
You being there as pacifist, did you try any acts of reconciliation? You know, did you sort of talk to them about forgiveness, reconciliation, or wasn't it appropriate in your...
Well, I don't think that the Quakers liked the fact of what they were doing to the collaborators. I think they thought that was wrong. They were quite a remarkable body of people, really. I think that they didn't like it either, and they said, "Well, you can understand it after what we've been through." There was, apart from friends, there was great bitterness against the Germans and the people who had collaborated with them, and a great deal of hatred for them. We were in a house. I suppose it was it was requisitioned. It was probably used by Germans before it was used by us, because it would have been vacant, and that's where we were living. When we left Holland, we went into Germany, and we drove in convoy. I suspect we were in a large convoy with army as well. And of that, I remember just hordes of refugees on the road, walking with their bundles everywhere. The whole of Germany was just seething with people walking. And as you went along the roads, you were going in the other direction, and that they were walking home from wherever they were, both inside Germany and from Germany to all the surrounding countries. And there was utter chaos and breakdown of all order, really. And it was pretty early on. There was a no fraternisation order for British troops. I think we all individually decided that we weren't going to have that. And I don't think any of us obeyed that. We always spoke to people. But of course, when you said Guten Morgen to a German, they were most likely not to answer. I mean, they had hostility towards us in a way that we didn't quite feel this hostility. I don't think we felt hostility, because, of course, we hadn't been fighting either. And in a war, I think we were all aware of some of the things that we'd done, like the bursting of the Myrna Dam had been as wicked as some of the things that the Germans did. Although there wasn't, I think, the personal brutality, but I'm sure there were probably incidents of that as well. I think the brutality on the Russian-German front had always been worse, probably, than it was in the West. And I think conditions were harder in every way, both weather and equipment. The Germans had no bandages, they had no soap. They were very short of everything. Their bandages were made of paper, and they had two sorts of soap, one that was like a stone, was sort of pumice stone, and one that floated on the top. Neither of them could you get any lather with. And they must have been living like this for certainly that year, since 1945 had been like that. The British troops, as they went in, took over all the German stores. So they would have they came by stores of medicines and blankets and sheets and medical supplies, and we very often then had the job of distributing these or using them. I was in relief section 126, and we were always with 127, and we then went, I think we spent a night at Celle on the way. Journeys were very slow. The roads were absolutely dreadful. They were pockmarked with holes from bombs, and they were slow and badly damaged, and mostly dirt roads, as I recall. We spent, I think, a night at Cellar, and that was the home of Mariana Tanner. That's where the unit was, and I think we spent a night there. I remember that there were six girls, and we were very dirty. It was very hot, and we had a bath of a very few inches of water, and all six of us in this water, and we drew lots. We did it two at a time, and we drew lots about who went in first. And we all had a wash in that water. In Germany at that time, the water supply and electricity supply was very restricted. I mean, you only have water perhaps an hour a day. And you know, you tended to draw off water, you know, so that you got it for the rest of the day and fill up things with water. Their living conditions were appalling. And as we went in from Holland, and I think we went in through Aachen and all the area where there'd been heavy fighting, we went over the Rhine Bridge at a very slow speed on a sort of Bailey Bridge, a temporary Bailey Bridge, which was pretty hair-raising. It was rather high up, I think, and it went very slowly. And there were only rails there. There wasn't sort of anything underneath, as far as you could see, so that the train on either side was just the edge of your world, and there was water underneath. I think that's the way we crossed the Rhine. Afterwards, they made it a little better. It went very slowly over there. The trains went pretty slowly anyway. That was travelling by train, but of course we were in our trucks, and we went over Bailey Bridges. From Celler we went to the Lüneburger Heide. Now, this is the place where the peace was in fact signed, and we were in one of the villages on the Lüneburger Heide. And I know that some of the men found bodies in wells and odd dead bodies in all sorts of corners. In fact, I never did. But, you know, we knew that certain wells were polluted and some weren't. We were in very primitive conditions there, and we had an attack of dysentery, you know, in the section. I certainly got dysentery and was sent to a military hospital.
You were saying there were six girls?
There were six girls in two sections. Mm-hmm. I think there were 12 in a relief team. It's either 10 or 12. And there were three girls in each. We always had three. We had three women and the rest were men in the section. And we travelled together until we got to Lüneburg. And then I think 127 stayed in Lüneburg, and we went out to the villages. One of the village we were in was called Barum. It was on the Lüneburger Heide, and we had, as I recall, several thousands of Italians, and they were being held there, presumably, until all the Allied soldiers and civilians had gone home. I think they were still there when I left the section, because I joined another section, but that was for a personal reason. We had domestic staff in the place where we were living, in an old sort of farmhouse. It was very primitive, with no toilets, and we dug latrines, and that's what we used. We dug them ourselves and used them. And it's hardly surprising, really, that we got dysentery. There were a lot of flies about. There must have been a lot of disease amongst the people we were caring for. I think there were Poles and many odds and ends of other nationalities, but most of them, I think, were Italian.
What sort of state were they kept in, these Italians?
I think they were living in the village. I think the village was more or less evacuated, and I think they were living in the village. Whether there were barracks there or not, I can't remember.
But they were they restricted, or were they allowed to walk about, you know?
I think they were allowed to walk about within the area. I think they were mainly waiting. I mean, sort of northern Germany is a long way from Italy, so I don't think they started walking. A lot of them did. We had an Italian cook who cooked all our meals, and he made sort of rather nice sweets, and he used to decorate them. He was a hotelier in civilian life, and I remember we had one chap in the unit who was a bit of a maverick, and he wanted to put a message on the kids. He would put messages on his sweets like, "When are we going home?" And we never knew, of course. And he wanted to put a greeting on one time, and he asked one of the English team, this chap Tuke, what he should write on it. And he said, he wrote on a piece of paper for him, "You greedy sods." So that's what we had on it. I remember quite a lot of fun and games like this. He used to send all his messages on the suite.